Okay, we're beginning on the top of Tetzayin Amud Aleph, five lines down. The Gemara asks, "By me name, Rav Nachman, Vestot Doraita, Odur Rabbanan." We've toyed with this a little bit, especially in yesterday's daf, as to whether the concept of Veset is Doraita Mina Torah. It's not necessarily explicit Mina Torah. We saw yesterday in Rashi, early in the Masechta, it's Halacha the Moshe Misinai. Or are they only a rabbinic institution? Over here, Rashi explains the difference that we would see, which is, ha, the kaimelon, the boy bedika, b'shat vesta. The necessity to do a bedika at the time of the veset, de'oraita hi. That is, min ha-torah. And again, on Tetvav Amud Aleph, when Rashi speaks about it in the terms of de'oraita, he calls it alocha, the Moshe Misinai. But over there, he also adds the additional fact, u'machzikin la b'tumat safek, that we assume that she has too much safek. Tim lo batka, if she doesn't check it, tmeya. She's classified as being tmeya. And again, Rashi on yesterday's daf said tmeya mi safek. Bali HaTosafot said that she's tmeya vada'it. Because once you miss it, you should have seen it, or you did see it. Vafilu batka. Vafilu batka chazmanu matzah teora. Even if you check later and you find yourself teora, the orach bizmano ba. We assume that the cycle comes at the proper time, and therefore she had a sighting of dam v'nafala karka, and it fell out, and she missed it, but it was there. O derabonon hu, or is it only rabbinically ordained? That's ruchu, that they said it's good for you to do a bdika then, because we do expect you to have your cycle, so we'd expect you to do a bdika. V'imlo batka tehora, but if you don't check, you are tehora. So according to Rashi, there are a number of factors here in the doraita versus the derabanan. The first of which is doraita, you have an obligation to do bdika. The failure to do that bdika makes the woman tmeya. And that's irrespective of whether she checks afterwards or not. Even if she checks afterwards and finds herself that she was tohora, we still assume, according to Rashi, that she's tmeya and she had a sighting back in the time when she expected it. And she just missed it. She lost the dam somehow. It fell out. It came out at a time where she wasn't aware of it, but it happened. So according to Rashi, you are classified as having tuma'ah, and even though it's vadai that you have tuma'ah, it's tuma'ah misafek, as we saw yesterday in Rashi. On the other hand, the Bali HaTosafot say, if you check afterwards, when you didn't check at the time of the veset, there's no way that if you check and you find yourself Torah, that somehow the dam came out without you noticing, and therefore they believe if you check afterwards and you don't find any dam, then you're also Torah, even midoraita. Midoraita just puts you in a position where we assume that you are tmeya. We are choshesh that you are tmeya, but we do not assume that if you do a check that undermines that, that you are still tmeya. That's, again, the first chiddush of Rashi is that doraita, you are considered tmeya, even if you check afterwards and find yourself Torah. Second chiddush of Rashi is that midoraita, you are only tmeya misafek. The Tosafot believes, number one, that if you miss the check, yes, you are tamei, but if you check afterwards and find yourself Torah, then you are Torah, and we don't believe that you were tamei at the time of the veset. Even though we do say to the woman that she should be a chosheshet for the tumah, it's not like the tumah vada'it that is associated with a veset. And he also believes that once we determine or we consider you to be tameah, you're tameah vada'it. We assume that you're for sure tameah. And obviously there are nafkaminot between whether you're a safek tuma or a vadai tuma. As far as the rabbonon, there we require a bedika. And according to Rashi, it sounds like that's all we require is a bedika. Absent the bedika, you are not tmeya. Whereas the Bali HaTosafot here also argue on that point, which is, even if you believe vesto dar rabbanan, we still believe that if you see it afterwards, or you have a sighting later on, that retroactively, we assume that that happened at the time of the veset midrabanan. And so he argues on Rashi on that point. Rashi thinks that when it's veset midrabanan, then all tuma is prospective, meaning that from the moment you sight, we assume that's the sighting time, and then 24 hours backwards, you'd be tmeya, but it has nothing to do with your veset, or we don't connect it to the veset. Tosafot still says that if you had a veset, and then you had a sighting afterwards midrabanan, then you would also be tmeya retroactively. And Rabbi Akiva Eiger asks where the Bali HaTosafot got that from. How did the Bali HaTosafot know that is true? It might be related to their other shita, which is they believe, and yesterday's daf that way, Vesadoraita, you are Tmeya Vadait. So then he can have the opportunity by a case of Veset Midrabanan that you're Tmeya Misafek. And he believes that the lack of a Bedika, even when you say Vesto Drabanan, leave you in a state of Yoma Veset. And therefore you need 7 days before we can claim that you are Tehora. Rashi thinks when it's Doraita, it's Tmeya Misafek. Then you can't have a Tmeyami Safek. Then when it's the Rabbonin, it has to be something less than that. And that means that it's Torah, that we don't assume it went back retroactively. And since we don't require a Bedika on the Yom HaVeset, there's no deemed Tuma, therefore she's Tuhara the next day. We don't need to wait 7 days. We don't need anything else besides the fact that you've crossed for Yom HaVeset and you haven't seen anything. Although the obvious problem with Rashi's Pshat, which is raised by the Baal HaTosafot, is don't we know from other places that you have to separate on the Yom HaVeset? Even if you think Vesto Derabanan, which is an indication there must be some sense of Tuma there. So many of the Achronim try to answer on behalf of Rashi, and we'll discuss some of that later on. Right, so that's just the background to the question. And now the Gemara goes or tries to answer this question. Amar lehu, mida amar huna chavrin, mishmei de Rav, since Rav Huna says over in the name of Rav, isha sheyesh la veset, a woman who has a fixed cycle, v'igia shat vesta velo badka, and the veset comes and she doesn't do a check, ubelisof ra'ata, and then later on she has a sighting, chosheshet the vesta, v'chosheshet the riata. You chosesh both for the veset and for the riyah. Alma, from that you see, vestot deoraita, that a veset is midoraita. The way that Rashi explains this is that over here, she missed the checking. So missing the checking, according to Rashi, makes you automatically tmeya. That's a given at this point. Then you have a riyah afterwards. Now, the riyah afterwards is not necessarily impactful, because even according to Rashi, even absent the riyah, you would have been tmeya. What the riyah adds is the fact that we are choshesh both for the veset and the riyah, which means the retroactive tuma, according to this, reaches back in two areas. One is that when normally you have a sighting, retroactively there's tuma, 24 hours made the eight. Over here, that is true as well. But we're also choshesh the vesta, which means that if the sighting happens, we assume that the tuma started at the time of the veset. So we look retroactively back to the veset. So retroactively, we look at the greater of 24 hours or the veset. So that means if you had a veset that is normally on Sunday, and then you have a sighting on Tuesday, after not checking on Sunday, then in this case, you would retroactively be tmeya back to Sunday because that's your shat vesta. On the other hand, if you normally had the veset on Sunday, and then you didn't do a check, and then you have a sighting Sunday night, so then retroactively back to your veset is 6 hours, 12 hours. There we're going to say you have tuma retroactively for 24 hours. So your tuma will go all the way back to a Motzei Shabbat because of the Ri'iyah. So we take the Chumrah of both of those. But what that shows you is that our assumption is that when you miss the Bedikah, you were really Tmeya. And that's why we forced the Tuma retroactively all the way back to the Veset. So when you cite it on Tuesday, after supposedly having a Veset on Sunday where you didn't check, we assume the Tuma goes back to Sunday. That shows you when you miss the Bedika that you are Tmeya. That's Rashi's Shita. That Doraita, if you miss the check, you are Tmeya. That's according to Rashi. And the Ri'iyah is just bringing up the Chumrah of the retroactive 24 hours, which would go further back than the Veset, which in of itself is strange, because if you really believe that the Veset is the Doraita, why would you think there's Tuma prior to the Veset time? Even if you believe that you're Tmeya from that point forward, but nevertheless, why should you be Tmeya before that? Before that moment, she didn't have to check or she didn't have to worry about the sighting of a Veset. It's a little strange, according to all these opinions, why the Tuma goes retroactively before the Veset. That's Rashi Shita. Tosafot, who believes that you need evidence afterwards to make you Tmeya retroactively, then the Ri'iyah here is what triggers the retroactive Tuma. Because Tosafot said, if you found yourself Torah afterwards, you would have been Torah the Gamre, even by Veset Doraita. So here, the Ri'iyah itself is what triggers the Tum'ah, because now you know for certain that you were not Tahura. Once we know that information, it goes retroactively back to the Veset. Now that it goes back to the Veset retroactively, that shows that it is De'oraita. That's the view of the Balei HaTosafot as to why this is a proof. Then, Ikedamre, Hachigamarle. There's another version of this, which is Taima Dirata. The whole reason this is true is because she had a sighting. Halo Rata, had she not had a sighting, Ein Choshashin, we would not have been Choshesh. Ama Vesto Dirabanan. Then Vested is Dirabanan. This is easy to explain according to Rashi, because according to Rashi, if you have Vested Doraita, we assume there is Tuma retroactively back to the Veset, because of the fact that we assume you're Tmeah from the Veset and onward, irrespective of what happens afterwards. The Re'iyah, according to Rashi, in the first case, was not meaningful, except for the fact that it pushes back Tumah 24 hours, so that it could go before the Veset. Other than that, the Re'iyah was not meaningful, because even absent the Re'iyah, you would have been Tmeah, according to Rashi, Midoraita. So then the second version is, if the Re'iyah is the trigger for the Tumah, that shows you that it's Midrabanan. According to Rashi, if you were Veset Doraita, you'd be Tmeah, even if you didn't have a Re'iyah. The Re'iyah doesn't do anything over here. Now that you're focused on the Re'iyah, according to this second Lashon, the Re'iyah is what triggers the Tumah. Well, if the Re'iyah is what triggers the Tumah, then it's not Veset Doraita. Because according to Rashi, Veset Doraita means you're Tmeah from the moment you had the Veset and didn't check. That makes you Tmeah. And there's nothing else to discuss. So now when you're introducing the fact that you need a Re'iyah to be Tmeah, that's already indicative of the fact that you weren't Tmeah absent the Re'iyah. If that's the case, then Vesto Dirabanan. That's the way Rashi learns it. Whereas the Balei HaTosafot says that even if a Veset is Dirabanan, now that she has a sighting, she still has Tumah retroactively. Then how do you differentiate between the first case, or first explanation, the second explanation, because in both cases, there's Tumah retroactively, according to the Balei HaTosafot. Balei HaTosafot, as we said before, believe, if it's Doraita, and you have a sighting, then it's Tumah retroactively. Absent a sighting, you'd also be, or would be Choshesh that you're Tmeah, unless you prove otherwise. So if you do a Bdikah in your Torah, you'd be Tahor. But absent that, you're going to be Choshesh the Tumah, and if you have a sighting, we'll make it Tumah Vada'it. But then Tosafot said before, as we noted, that even when Vesto de Rabbanan, if you have a sighting later on, there is Tumah retroactively back to the Veset. Well, then what's the difference between Veset de Rabbanan and Veset Doraita? So here, the Balei HaTosafot suggests that the difference is whether Mikul Kelet the Minyana. Is there Minyan counting off? Which is that by Veset de Rabbanan, the retroactive Tumah is exactly that. It's a Chashash, it's a Din de Rabbanan. But we assume that whenever you sighted the Dam, whenever you found the Dam, that's the beginning of your Nida cycle. So you'll count 7 days of Tumah from then, and then after that, the 11 days of Yemei Ziva. On the other hand, Doraita, if you believe Vestod or Doraita, and you have a sighting on Tuesday, then yes, retroactively you have Tumah back to Sunday, but that'd be true Midrabanan as well. So what's different around the Doraita? Here, we don't know when your cycle began. We don't know if you had a Petach L'Nidah on Tuesday, or your Petach L'Nidah was on Sunday. That means, when are your 7 days up? Are your 7 days up when you hit Shabbat? Or are your 7 days up only when you hit Monday? Now that has a big nafkamina at those threshold points. While you're Tmeah and the time of Tumat Nidah, it doesn't matter. What matters is if you have a sighting on Sunday. If you have a sighting on Sunday, is that already a sighting during Yemei Ziva? Or is that a sighting part of your Yemei Tumat, Yemei Nidah? That will be the safek. So when it's Doraita, that throws in this additional safek, which is very impactful, because there's a big difference between having a sighting during Yemei Nidah versus Yemei Ziva, as well as later on, when you complete the Yemei Ziva, whether you're in your Yemei Ziva or you're post Yemei Ziva, and does that mean you're Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom, or did you start a new Nidah cycle? So you'll have that safek all the way at the end of the 18 days as well. That's what Tosafot says is the nafkamina between Doraita and Dirabanan. According to Rashi, the Re'iyah is the key factor in the difference between the two Shitot. Even though it mentions Re'iyah in the first case, that Re'iyah is only to tell you that retroactively 24 hours there's Tumah. But absent that, it has nothing to do with the Vesut. According to Rashi, in the Doraita case, it's all about the Veset, she's Tmeya, from the moment of the Veset, irrespective of what happens afterwards. And that's why in the first Lashon, where we say that she is Tmeya, all the way back to the Veset, that's an indication that the Veset is Doraita. In the latter case, where the Riyah is pivotal, that shows you that it's Dirabanan, because you're only Tmeya if you see the Dam. You don't see the Dam, you're not Tmeya. So that's why it's only rabbinic in nature. And he believes that there is no retroactive Tuma then. According to the Baya Tosafot, the Riyah is impactful both in the Doraita level and on the Dirabanan level, because you need evidence in the case of Doraita to make you Tamei. The truth is, the burner of proof is on you to show your tahor. If you don't bring that, then we're going to assume you're tmeah, at least mechashash tmeah. And if you see something, we'll say it's tmeah vada'it. But the riyah is important because that shows that you were definitely tmeah retroactively. By the din d'rabbanan, it's also impactful, the riyah, because absent the riyah, you wouldn't have been tmeah. But Tosafot says, the distinction that Rashi draws is not true. You're tmeah retroactively in both cases back to the veset. So then what's the difference between them? Also, it says the difference between them is, do we worry about when you started your nida? By Doraita, we're going to be choshesh for the day you saw and the day of your veset. Whereas by the Dirabonon, we're only going to worry about the day that you saw. We're not going to worry about the retroactive tuma in that case. So that's the two ways to read this, according to Rashi, according to the Baalei HaTosafot. The other question that Baalei HaTosafot raised is that we just saw Rav Huna on yesterday's daf. And Rav Huna on yesterday's daf, bottom of Ted Vavu Man Aleph, it says, I'm Rav Huna, lo shana shalo igiya shat vesta. Av igiya shat vesta, surah, kasavar vesto doraita. So, if, according to the way that we saw Rav Huna in yesterday's daf, vesto doraita, then how over here do you have a lashon in which Rav Huna would possibly say that vesto are dirabanan? So it's clear that he holds the vested is doraita. So the Baalei HaTosafot answer that over here, it's in the name of Rav. Over there, it's Rav Huna himself. So here he's quoting Rav, but he doesn't hold like Rav. Over there, he's quoting his own position. So he clearly believes Vesto Doraita. The question is, when he's quoting Rav, was he telling us that a Vesto Doraita in the name of Rav, that's the first Lashon? Or the second Lashon says in the name of Rav that he was saying that Vesto are the Rabbanan. That's the way that the Baalei HaTosafot distinguish. There are achronim that want to distinguish between the nature of the cases. That is, over there, we were discussing about a situation in which, do you have to ask the woman? He was away on a trip, and now he's coming back. Does he have to awaken her? Does he have to check with her to make sure that she is tehora? So in that case, Rav Huna says, Vesto Doraita, and we're choshesh. If you passed over Shat Vesta, we're not going to let you get away without asking once you crossed over Shat Vesta. Over here, we're dealing with a different issue. We're not dealing with the issue of whether you have to ask or not ask, or you're relying on a chazakah. Over here, we want to know, what's the determination with regards to the Tuma, and what's our expectation? Are you really Tmeya, or is it just a Chashash? And so that's how you can explain the Gemara over here. Over here, you might think that Vesto the Rabbanan, with regards to the Chashash Tuma that's associated with them. Over there, it's a question of whether you can rely on the Chizkat Tara in the face of the Veset. There, we're not going to bend, and we'll say like Vesto Doraita. Over here, where it's nothing to do with the relying on a Chazakah, it's trying to determine, where did the Tuma start? When did the cycle start? In a case where she had no Hargosha, maybe over there he believes it's Vesto to Rabbanan. And so that's how some of the Achronim tried to differentiate between the case here and there and say that Rav Huna there could say Doraita and over here say the Rabbanan. Itmar, Isha Sheishla Veset, Vigyashat Vesta, Velo Badka. Exactly what we are saying is the Nafkamina between Doraita and the Rabbanan, which is a woman who has a fixed Veset, and she crosses over that veset and did not do a bdika. Ulevisof badka. And then in the end, she does a check. Amarav badka umatzat tmeya. Tmeya. If she does a check and finds herself tmeya, then she is tmeya. Tehora. She finds herself tehora, then she is tehora. Shmuel amar afilu badka matzat tehora nami tmeya. Whereas Shmuel says, if you find yourself tehora, we still say you are Tmeya, Mipnei, Shorach, Bizmanoba, because we have a belief that the, whether it's Oreach, the guest comes at its fixed time, or Orach, Orach Kanashim, which is the cycle, the menstrual cycle comes at its fixed time. And therefore, even if you find yourself to Orach afterwards, you still assume that you are Tmeya. So according to Rav, there seems to be a distinction as to whether when you find yourself checking after you were supposed to check, if the outcome is determined by what you find. If you find your Tmeah, then you were Tmeah. If you find you were Torah, then you are Torah. Rav Shmuel says, doesn't matter what you find, because we had expectations you were going to have a sighting. Lema v'vestot kamalifligay. Let us assume they're arguing about the status of vestot. Shmar sabar doraita. Shmuel holds it's doraita. Therefore he says, it doesn't matter what you find. Even if you find yourself Torah, we had expectations you were going to see it, and therefore you are tmeya, retroactive back to the time of the veset. Umar sabar dirabonon. And Rav holds that it's only a vestot dirabonon. So therefore, if you find yourself Torah, then there's no problem. We don't assume that you were Tmeah back then, if now you find yourself Torah. If you find yourself Tmeah, then, according to Rashi, you have prospective Tumah. According to Baal Tosafot, you even have retroactive Tumah back to the Veset. But that's the only case you're going to be Tmeah. Amar Rabbi Zeira, you don't have to learn that way. Tekulei Amo Vesto Toraita. Everybody believes it's Toraita. Kanch Badkatzma Kishur Veset. Kanch Lo Badkatzma Kishur Veset. Depends how soon after she had the expectation of the Veset did she do a check. If she did the check immediately afterwards, then Rav believes that that's sufficiently close to the Veset that if you discover that you are Torah then, that's evidence that the Veset didn't take place and they didn't have a sighting of Dam. Whereas Kanchlo Bat Katzma Kashir Veset, the other case is a case where he didn't check Kashir Veset. Now, you could read this in one of two ways. You could read this either that they don't argue at all, and Vesto Doraita, and Rav is speaking about a case where you did it Kashir Veset, and Shmuel is speaking about a case where you did it She'enu Kashir Veset, or the first lashon that Rashi brings is that they are arguing. They're just not arguing about Vesto Doraita. They're arguing about when you have a Veset, when you did a check on the Veset immediately after the Veset. According to Rav, check immediately after the Veset is sufficiently close to the Veset that it's determinant. And it says that if you don't find anything then, you didn't have the Veset and you didn't have the Dam come. Shmuel says you didn't check during the Veset. And so if you check afterwards, you can't bring evidence from that, even though it's immediately afterwards, it's afterwards. Afterwards, it's afterwards. And that's the explanation of their Machloket. And the reason Rav says that she's Tmeah in the other cases is because those checks were not Kishior Veset. Now the problem with this Gemara is how do you explain Shur Veset? What does it mean immediately after the Veset? Before, when we spoke about having Biyah, and then we said she did it Odyom, she did it immediately afterwards, we call that Shur Veset, there we can define what immediate is. That is, the Shamash came out and she did an external check, that's immediate, because you have a moment in time where something transpires, and that moment in time, immediately afterwards, is called Shur Veset or Odyom. Here, when you're dealing with the Veset, which in itself doesn't have a fixed time. It's a period of time. It's a window of time. Whenever we say a Veset, we usually speak about an Onah. An Onah is a 12-hour window of time. When we say that a woman has a fixed cycle, we don't expect her to see exactly the same time every month. We expect her to see at a relatively the same time, during the day, every 30 days. But that doesn't mean that you know when during the day it's going to happen. It could be anywhere on a span of 12 hours. So then, how do you define what's immediately afterwards? So there's some who say exactly that. In the Onah, in the 12-hour period where we expected to see day, the 12 hours of day, 12 hours of night, immediately afterwards you did a check. That's how you're going to explain it. Others say that we get a window, and if you do it within a certain period of time, doesn't need to be immediately afterwards. Maybe it's within 1 hour or 6 hours after you expect the Onah, that's considered immediate. Because when you deal with a finite moment, immediate means really immediately. But when you deal with a span of time, maybe immediate means 1 hour, 6 hours. So there are others that suggest that. And there are Achronim who even posit that this woman has a very finite schedule. And she sees at the 5th hour on Sunday, every 4 weeks, something like that, where you could have such a concept of immediately afterwards. Or you have to suggest that it's a different qualitative bdika, where you leave it in for the entire duration of the Veset, like a moch dachuk, and in that way you cover the entire period of time of the Veset. But just know that that's a little bit of an issue in terms of the explanation of this Gemara. Right, then Rav Nachman Yitzchak disagrees. with this statement of Rabbi Zeira and says, "Bevestot gufayu kamiflegei." They are arguing in vestot. The Mar Savar vestot deoraita. Shmuel believes that vestot are deoraita. Mar Savar vestot derabanan. So Amar Rav Sheshet kitanaye. That is like a machloket tanaim. Rabbi Eliezer Omer tmeya nida. Rabbi Eliezer believes that she has full-fledged tuma like tmeya nida. Bishu Omer tivadek. She has to check. Again, here we're assuming that this machloket of vesto doraita, vesto dorabanan, is impactful. Rabbi Eliezer believes that the vesto doraita, and therefore, if she misses her check, we're going to assume that there is a tuma there and a tuma doraita. Whereas Rabbi Yoshua says, check. If you find that you're Tmeah, then you're Tmeah. You find that you're Torah, then you're Torah. Bane Tanae, Kiani Tanae. And these Tanaim are like these Tanaim. The Tanya, Rabbi Meir Omer, Tmeah Nida. Again, Rabbi Meir says, you are Doraita, you're Tmeah Nida. Chomim Omim, Tivadek, you check. So, Amar Abaye, Afanam Namitanina. We have a Mishnah that corroborates that, which is, that's not. Rabbi Meir Omer, imaita b'mechabeh, if she was in hiding. Hiding here means they're not playing hide and seek. She's hiding because there are marauders running through the town. She's scared for her life, and she's hiding to save her life. B'igia shat vesta, and she crosses over what would have been her natural cycle. Belo badka, and she didn't check. Tehora, then we don't worry about it. Shecharada misaleket et adamim, because the fear causes the cessation of the blood, meaning that it's a known phenomenon that psychological stress and fear can cause a skipping or an alteration in the menstrual cycle. And that's what we're expecting over here. If she missed the cycle, didn't check, we still assume she's still around in this case. Taimadika charada. That's only because she was in that state of panic or fear. Aleka charada. Had she not been in a state of panic or fear, tmeah. She would have been tmeah. Alma vesto doraita. So there you see that Rabbi Meir Shita is vesto doraita. And the Tosfot at the end of Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak paskins at vesto to the Rabbanan, and he says v'chein pasak shilto to Rav Achai Rabbeinu Chananel. So now you actually have here three machlokot that are arguing about the same issue: vesto doraita, vesto to Rabbanan. The first one's between Rav and Shmuel. If you have Rav and Shmuel be Surah, you'd say Alocha Kirav. Tosfot says that Rav Nachum Yitzchak who Batra, and Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak is the one who's a Batra in terms of Amoraim. Itle the Rav vesto de Rabbanan, because the way he sets up the machloket, Rav thinks vesto de Rabbanan, and halachik Rav b'isure. Then we compare that to a braita that has Rabbi Eliezer versus Rabbi Yoshua, and when we have machloket Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua, we paskin like Rabbi Yoshua, who also says vesto de Rabbanan. And then the next machloket is between the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir, Chachamim Rabbi Meir halachik Chachamim. And again, the Chachamim are the ones with the opinion that it is Vestot Midrabanan. So here I have three machlokot, and in the Klali Apsak, in each one of these cases, you would have leaned towards saying that it's Vestot Midrabanan. Plus, Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak, who's a Batra, is the one who says that they still argue, Rav and Shmuel. If you said they don't argue, then you believe Vestot Midrabanan, because then you say both of them are saying Vestot Midrabanan. Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak, who says they are arguing, makes it that the Locha will be like Rav in Surah, make it that vestot de Rabbanan. That would suggest that we would paskin like vestot de Rabbanan, and then all of these machlokot also, in their nature of psak, support that view, that it is vestot de Rabbanan. Although at the end he says, therefore, isha yeshla vesin velo badka b'shat vesta, v'achar kach badka v'matzah to'ora l'ba'ala. She can go back to her husband. Mi'unira l'chatchila tzricha libdok b'shat vesta. He has to check at the time of her veset, which leaves open the discussion amongst the achronim as to whether, even if we hold that vesto de Rabbanan, are there still maybe aspects of vesto de Doraita, like on the yom of veset itself, the requirement for husband and wife to separate on that day, or the determination that on the day of the veset itself, maybe we're choshesh for tuma midoraita, and her chesgat tara does not offset the possibility of having sighting on that day, and therefore on the day itself of the Veset, it is a din doraita, which is what the No Debiuda suggests. Another achronim have different formulations as to why maybe the Yom HaVeset itself might be different, have a doraita aspect to it.
But when we say Vesto de Rabbanan, that's after the fact or after that day itself. Let us assume that these Tanaim argue in a similar fashion. The Tanya, Ored Dam Machmat Makah. Person sees Dam because of an injury, a wound. Afilu Atoch Yimei Nidata. Even in the time period where she's expected to be a Nida, Tehora. Then that Dam is not considered to be Dam Nida. Tiber Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Rabbi Omer, Im Yesh La Veset, Choseshet La Vesta. If she has a Chev Veset, then we worry about the Veset. My love. Bahaka Miflege. This is the Machloket. Mar Savar Vestot Oraita. Mar Savar Vestot De Rabbanan. Rabbi holds that Vestot are De Oraita. And therefore she has to be Choseshet the Vesta. When she crosses over her Veset, the Dam that she's seeing, we assume, is Dam Nida. And you can't attribute it to Dam Makah anymore because we assume it's all Dam Nida. Then Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that Vestot are De Rabbanan. So even if she's crossing over her Veset, if we can identify the Dam as being Dam Makah, then we'll classify that as being Dam Torah, not Dam Tameah. How do you know? So the Baal Tosafot already say that. Nira the Dafka b'margeshet shebat Dam Zemina Makah. She's got to have a sensation, or she's got to have some indication it's coming from a Makah. Because otherwise, Tosafot says, any woman who has an injury or wound internally will never be a Nida anymore. Because you can always assume that the Dam came from the Dam of the Makah. You can't say that because then you won't have the world of Nida anymore. So it must be that she has some identifying way to know that it was Dam Makah. And Tosafot says it's because Margeshet, she feels it. So Gemara says, Amaravina, lo, Tukuli Alma, Vestot Dirabanan. Everybody holds that Vestot is Dirabanan. Vahacha, Bimikor, Mikomotamei, Kamiflegei. They're arguing about what's the status of the uterus. Does the blood that's found through the uterus automatically become tamei? Or is it only the dam amikor that is tamei? Shimon Gamliel Savari Shah Tehora. A woman has the status of being Tehora. The dam tamei, the ka'ati derech mikor. And the dam itself is tamei because it exited through the mikor. So that you can have a differentiation between the status of the woman and the status of the dam. The dam is tamei because it came out through the uterus. Now, it was produced, or the dam came from a makah, it came from some wound or injury, so that's why the dam doesn't make her into a nida, because it's not menstrual dam. On the other hand, since it went through the mikor makes it tamei, to the point where the blood that's exiting is tamei. The mikor itself is tamei, the uterus itself is tamei, then anything going through it is going to become tamei. So that's what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is saying. The dam's exiting, coming out through the makor, but it's dam of a makah. And so therefore the dam itself is tamei, but the woman remains torah. As Rashi says over here, mikomo tamei, kol dam aba derech sham, afilu enu dam nida, ave ava tumala tamei adam tumat erev. Rashi says that the makor, according to this view, if you think it's tamei, like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, it's tamei to the point where anything that passes through it is transformed into an avatuma. And that avatuma, then if it touches an individual, which will be the case in the discharge, then she becomes a tamei tumat erev, a rishon l'tuma. And if she was a suk b'tarot, it would be problematic. Vamarle Rabbi, and Rabbi says to him, Ichai shet the veset, isha nami tmeya. If you believe there's a veset, then their woman is tmeya also, because you can't assume that it's all damakah. Maybe there's some dina that's coming out of there. Vilo chayshet the veset. If you don't worry about a veset, then mikor mikomo tohorhu. The mikor itself doesn't transform blood into something that is tameh. And so you can't just say because it went through the mikor that all of a sudden it's now dam tameh. The mikor inherently is not tameh. It is tohor. Now, there are those that want to speak to a nuance on this, which is not all dam mikor is going to rabbi tohor. It might have to do with the difference as to where the makah is, which is if the makah is in the uterus itself and the dam's coming from the makah, maybe over there you could argue that the dam is tamei because it came out of the uterus. But if you have dam that sources outside the uterus and then passes through the uterus, then that may not be something that makes it into tamei. Now, if you remember, we use this to help explain the difference between why we want an individual to do checking for tarot and not for biyah. Seems counterintuitive. Biyah or boil nida is a chiyuv karet midoraita. Tuma with regards to tarot results in a possible mita bidei shamayim, but not a issue of karet, generally. And so therefore, why would you make people check for tarot and not check for nida?
Based on the Igret Moshe.
We explained this earlier on, that the difference is in the citing of dam, which is that the dam that comes out with a hargosha, with a sensation of the dam releasing from the uterus, that's what makes the woman into a nida. And so that rarely happens, or that's hard to come by. But if it does happen, the woman knows about it because she has a hargosha. But by tarot, we have a different issue or a different thing that we're focused on. And that is that if she's tmeah, we have a problem. Now, she becomes tmeah because she's a nida. She could also become tmeah because the dam originated in the makor. And here, even Rabbi is going to agree to that. Because here, Rabbi disagrees when it's dam makah that goes through the makor. But if it's menstrual dam that's coming out of the makor, even though it doesn't make her into a nida because she didn't have a hargosha, it nevertheless, that dam is tamei. That dam that is tamei causes you problems for tarot, because it's an ava tuma, touching the woman, she's a rishon tuma. So that's why we require more bidikot for tarot than we do for bia. Even though bia is more chamur, bia is less likely to be an issue because of the hargosha aspect. So she's not a nida. She's not a nida, you can have bia with her. If she's tamei, there's no restriction against having bia with her. The restriction of bia is when she's a nida. That only happens if she has a sighting with the hargosha. So you don't need a bedinka for that in general. But if you have dam that exits from the mikor, that's menstrual dam, it may not make her into nida if she didn't have a hargosha. Nevertheless, the dam is tamei. And for tarot, that's a serious problem. And that's why we require bedikot for tarot, even though we don't require for tashmish. Now the next mishnah, Beit Shammai Omrim, Tzricha Bet Edim, Al Kol Tashmish V'Tashmish. You need two cloths for every biyah that takes place overnight. Oh, tishamesh the oraner. If you don't want to use new cloths for each biyah, then you got to use a candle. Because then, what it seems is, you could check the cloths that you used, and then you could reuse them because you're able to check them. Beit Hillel omrim, daya b'shnei edim kol halayla. You only need two checks all night. Now, what are the two edim that you need over here? Rashi claims, echad lefanav, v'echad acharav. The two edim here are for the woman. The check she does before bia, and the check she does after bia. And Beit Shammai believes that you have to do a check before and after every bia that you do during that night. Now, if you used separate cloths for the checking through the night, then what Beit Shammai says, just wait until the morning. And that's what Rashi says over here. If you use one before and one afterwards, then according to Beit Shammai in our Mishnah, you don't need to check until the morning. Wait until the morning and you'll check all of them in the morning. Whereas, if you want to use the same one for before and after each biyah, then you need Oran Er so that you can check on the spot, and then you can continue to use them through the night. Beit Hillel says it's enough to do one check before the biyot of the night, and one check at the end of the night after all the biyot. I mean, before the first biyah, and after the last biyah, you can do a check, and that is sufficient. So there are two chidushim in Rashi here. One chiddush in Rashi is the checks that we're speaking about here are before and after biyah. The second one is, you can leave all those until the morning. You don't have to check them until the morning. That is shocking, because if the check before biyah is to prevent you from having biyah with a nidah, then why would you wait until the morning? What does that do for you in the morning? In order to make anything of it, why wouldn't you want to know the information immediately and not in the morning? What that shows you is Rashi believes that both the check after biyah and before biyah are because of tarot. They're not to prevent a problem in terms of biyah, bo nida. They're about tarot. And that's what we explained earlier in the Masechta, that the migo that you do it for tarot, we do it for biyah, is not because the migo that you're doing it for tarot, therefore we may as well check and make sure you're not bo el nida. For Rashi, that migo is migo that you check tarot morning and night. So too, we figure you should check for tarot both before and after biyah, which is because, as Rashi says, the biyah sometimes can cause a flow of dam or cause the menstrual cycle to come about. And so therefore, we want you checking for tarot before and after biyah. Nothing to do with bo'el nidah, but having to do with the fact that we want it for tarot. Ah, why check beforehand then? That's because then in the morning you'll know if you're chayav achatat. Because if it was, you found something on there. We're not choshesh for that. But in the end, if you found something on there, then you'll know that you're chayav achatat. That's Rashi's view of the Mishnah. And you can understand why Rishonim would argue on Rashi on a number of fronts as to why that is the case. You can see this, first of all, with the regards to the Baya Tosafot, as well as in the Tosafot Rosh, and the Ramban, and everybody else almost says that the Shnei Edim here are not one before and one afterwards. The Shnei Edim here are Achar Tashmish. Two Edim after the Tashmish. One for her, one for him. It says Tzricha. She needs them. That makes Rashi sound right. She needs the checks. That would be one before and afterwards. You say, why does she need two Edim if the man and the woman are doing the check? So the Ramban answers that that's because typically the woman is the one who prepares the Edim. It's just telling her to have the Edim ready because they both need to check afterwards. The reason these Rishonim push heavily in that direction is because the Gemara before told us that the check before with a clean aid was only done by the Tznuot. The Tznuot used to change their aid each time. But regular women did it with one cloth all the way through. So now you're suggesting to me, according to Rashi, that the whole Mishnah is mukam for Tznuot. You're saying to me the Mishnah is talking about Tznuot, not regular women? That doesn't make so much sense. And therefore, it must be that we're speaking about the check afterwards. The second thing is that we see from Beit Shammai, you don't need to check the cloths until the morning. Now, if the check before is to prevent you from being bo'al nidah, what's the point of checking in the morning? Well, we said, according to Rashi, that's not the purpose of the check before. But it's clear that these Rishonim believe that the check before is to prevent you from being bo'al nidah. And that's the meaning of the Migo. Migo that you're going to check after the Biyah for Tarot, then we make you check before the Biyah to prevent bo'al nidah. Well, to prevent bo'al nidah, that's only relevant if you check before you have the Biyah. To check afterwards wouldn't be meaningful. That's why these Rishonim say can't be speaking about the cloth before. It has to be speaking about cloths afterwards, because the one before, it is only meaningful if you check it at that moment. And therefore, it can't be the subject of our Mishnah. And there, again, the Rishonim here argue and say that the check before is for Biyah, and you have to check it. You have to actually check the cloth before you have Biyah. So they argue with Rashi on a number of points. First of all, that the checks are the two checks afterwards, not the check before. Even the Balei Tosafot argue on that. And the Tosafot Rosh over here says, you have to check them after every tashmish. You don't wait until the morning. You have to check them after every tashmish. So that's the way that the Beit Shammai says that you have to check them after every tashmish. And again, the Ramban says the reason you got to check after every tashmish is because the whole point of doing it beforehand is to prevent bol nidah. And that's the point of that check beforehand. If that's the case, you need to check after every tashmish. All right, so that's the machloket. And then Beit Hillel says, Daya b'shnei edim kol halayla. You need to wait in the whole night. According to Rashi, it means one before, one afterwards. One before the first biyah, one after the last biyah. According to the other Rishonim, it just means at the end of the night, you require a check after every tashmish to tashmish. You can use the same edim all the way through. And you don't have to check any of the edim until the morning. The one before, that you need to do anyway, because that has nothing to do with this. That you're going to have to do even according to Beit Hillel, because that's not the discussion of the Mishnah. That's to prevent bol nidah. That has to be done irrespective of whether you're holding Beit Hillel or Beit Shammai. And this is only about the check afterwards. Now, Tanu Rabbanan. Even though we say that having biyah to oraner is inappropriate, either you need two edim for every tashmish, again, machloket Rashi and the Balei Tosafot as to what that is, o teshamesh the oraner, or you can have biyah oraner. It's enough to use two edim all night. What you see is that despite the fact that we would discourage you from having biyah l'oraner, nevertheless, Beit Shammai says, it's extenuating circumstances. We need you to check. If you don't have cloths for each biyah, you're going to have an oraner. Otherwise, you're not going to have the information that you need. Tanya, Amru lahem Beit Shammai de Beit Hillel, the divrechem, licho shema tire tipat dam, kechardal, bebiyat rishonah. Beit Shammai says to Beit Hillel, maybe the woman had a sighting of menstrual dam, a tiny drop in the first biyah, b'techapena shechvat zera b'biyah shniyah. And then in the second intercourse, the shechvat zera will overwhelm that tipat dam, and then you won't have any ability to see that tipat dam. Amru le-Beit Hillel, af le-divreichem, even according to your shita, leichush ad she'arok b'toch hapeh, Shemini Mok Volechlo. So it's a mashal here that when the saliva is still in the mouth, maybe it will disappear by itself. And the same thing over here. Maybe even in the first bi'ah, she had a sighting of a droplet of dam, a menstrual dam, and the shechvat zera from the first bi'ah overwhelmed it, and then you're not going to see it. Amru lahem, nefishenodem imok pamachat, inimok shtei pamim. It's not the same to have a factor that can wipe it out, overwhelm it, or subvert it when you have bi'ah once versus having bi'ah twice. So you're right. It's possible that in the first bi'ah it was covered up, but I can't do anything about that. So at least let me check after the first bi'ah. Adding on more shechvat zera on top of that is not going to result in a better check. It's going to diminish the efficacy of the check, and therefore it's better to check after the first bi'ah rather than to wait until after the second bi'ah. Now, according to Rashi, the Shitato, he says, even according to Beit Shammai, interestingly enough, you're not going to know until the morning, because you're not going to check until the morning, the Shita Rashi. That means that even though you're going to do a check after each bi'ah, Abagab Dolo Yadinan Adamachar, even though you won't know until the morning, Mio Be'inan Mochicha Kayam, you still need the evidence in place. Dibla Achi, Ma'uli Chachamim Etakanatan. Otherwise, what is the purpose of the Takanat Chachamim? Even according to Beit Shammai, you're not going to do anything about it tonight. It's just that the fact that the evidence is there is what we want to establish. Because then the Takamim's Takana, to check for Dam or for Tumah in the process of Biyah, has meaning. According to you, Beit Hillel, it's all going to get run over. The guy will have Biyah with her a number of times. By the time he does the check at the end of the night, according to Rashi, according to the other Mishonim, all the checks are done at the end of the night. It's not going to be a meaningful check. It's going to be flooded with Shechvat Zera. And you have no idea if there was any dam there or not. You'd have to have significant dam before it had any impact on the situation. And then what's the point of having a check, according to the Chachamim, if the check is looking for Tumah that you could have erased in the process of having Biyah? That's the reasoning by Beit Shammai. Beit Hillel says, well, since it can't be ruined by the first Biyah, then why worry about it at the second Biyah? Once we're already not being Choshesh for every little drop, because it could be covered up, then we're not going to be choshesh and just do one general check at the end of the night. Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yeshua, Ro'ani at Dibrei Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai's position makes a lot of sense. Amar Lo Tamidav, Rebbe, Kama Herachta Aleinu. Oh my goodness, Rebbe, you're really machmir on us. That's the way Rashi translates Herachta. You're machmir on us. Amar Lehem Mutav She'arich Aleichem Olam Hazeh, Kedei She'arichu Yimeichem Do'olam Haba. Better that I be stringent and chamur with you in this world, so that you are yarichu yamechem the olam haba, that you have a long life the olam haba, and you won't be nichshol in problems of tuma and tara. The play on the word herachta over here, according to Rashi's explanation, doesn't work as well, because he says herachta means chumra. So the chumra today, I'm going to give you a long life. There are some that say herachta take literally over here. You made our night now longer. Because before, we just needed to do one check in the beginning at the end of the night, not in between every bi'ah. Now that we have to do a check between every bi'ah, before and after every bi'ah, or according to the other Rishonim, after every bi'ah you have to do a check, you made the whole process of the night longer. You are rachta aleinu. You made it more difficult in making it longer at night. So he says, better I make your life longer and you're miserable at night, than you're not harachta l'olam haba, that you don't get arichu yamin l'olam haba. That explanation, the play on the word arachta, works a little bit better. Amar Rabbi Zeira, Dibrei Kulam Yomad. The conclusion from all that's being said here is, Bal Nefesh Lo Yivol V'Yishneh. An individual should not have Biyah, and then do a repeat Biyah. Beit Shammai clearly says that's problematic, because he wants you to check in between. And even Beit Hillel, who says that you don't check, that's just because they say it's sufficient to check in the beginning and the end. But they agree that there's a chashash, or there's a possibility that having a bi'ah a second time could be problematic. So we are chashinan, the shema d'rat adam machmat tashmish, which is Rashi's reasoning for why you do a check by bi'ah. If we're worried about that, then why should you be bo'el and shoneh and put yourself into that position of safek? Better not to put yourself in that position of safek. Tosafot says over here, lo yivol v'yishneh, the shema machmat chimud tashmish rishon ra'ata, that the Gemara has a belief here that a woman who is desirous of her husband, that desire could create what's called dam chimud. that there's dam or a menstrual dam that exits because of her desire for bi'ah, and that is a thing that happens only, of course, in the first bi'ah, because that's when she has the greatest desire. By the time you get to the second bi'ah, that doesn't exist anymore. So a bal nefesh should be machmir. And Tosfot says dafka bal nefesh. That's only someone who is a bal nefesh, because Rabbi Zeira knows that for her husband to do bi'ah with her, he doesn't need bidika. But not that this is a standard for everybody. This is a bal nefesh. This is a chumrah. Rashi says because the possibility that you have dam that comes machmat tashmish, and we're worried about it being covered up, and Beit Hillel agrees that that's a possibility. So bal nefesh be machmir to not have that problem. Even though Beit Hillel doesn't make you do anything about it, they still agree that it's a possibility. And according to the Tosafot, because of the chimod of tashmish, the first bi'ah will result in dam, and that'll get covered up if you're boel v'shoneh. Therefore we say to a bal nefesh, you shouldn't do that. Rav Amar, boel v'shoneh, kitanya ha'i l'tarot. He says, you can be boel, shoneh, don't worry about it at all, because the brighter that we brought was only speaking about tarot. The question of checking in between is not the checks to prevent the problems of boel nida. The checks are here because of tarot. And therefore, if it's dealing with tarot, as far as bi'ah is concerned, we're not going to be choshesh, and then being boel and shoneh is not an issue at all. And Tosafot says over here, the reason that Rava thinks that even a bal nefesh doesn't need to do this is what we said earlier, that if we force these types of checks in between, then maybe the bal, when she sees her checking and doing these things, will start to worry that there's something wrong, and then he won't be together with his wife because he's afraid there's tumah. And so to avoid those types of situations, we don't make her check, because that checking already makes the bal, makes the husband start to suspect that there's something amiss, and that will cause problems in their relationship. We have a brayta that's supportive of this. When you need to do these checks, that's for tarot. Of her bala, as far as her husband is concerned, she's muteret. And then here is a non sequitur. It has nothing to do with this topic, but also is true. Remember, that's when he left her with a chazaka tara. He leaves her b'cheskat tumah. He can't make an assumption that she is Torah. He needs to know that information. He needs to get that information. We saw yesterday that there might be an exception to that rule where he's able to calculate her veset and the number of days of nida passed, and she could have gone to the mikveh. So in that case, we said that he doesn't necessarily have to ask her. He can assume that that's the case. And we noted that the Ramban over there suggests that that's because her acquiescence is an implicit saying of Tahora Ani, and that's why she doesn't have to ask her directly because of that. And many point out that's only Ba Min HaDerech, that we have that dispensation, but he's at home, he needs to ask her. She's B'Cheskat Tmeya, he's got to ask before she gets gains or regains her Cheskat Tara. Amar Rabbi Yava, Amar Rabbi Chiya, Barashi, Amar Rav. If she did a check with a cloth and then it was lost, she cannot go on and do tashmish amita until she actually does another check. If it was around, couldn't she have bi'ah irrespective of whether she checked it or she didn't check it? Even though she has no idea what's on that cloth. Hashta nami tashmish. So to hear, why can't she do bi'ah without having the aid there? She did the check, and she's not going to check the cloth anyway. She's going to have bi'ah even without checking the cloth. So now when the cloth got lost, why is it any different than the case where she has the cloth here? Over here, the evidence is here. In the other case, the evidence is not here. Meaning that if you allow her to have tashmisha mita without the evidence being there, then the whole Takanat Chachamim goes out the window. The whole point of Takanat Chachamim is you do a check before, and as long as the evidence is there, we're not worried about the Tashmisha Mita. The Takanat Chachamim was with Tarot to start with. So therefore, the Tarot is still taken care of because she can check later the cloth. But if the cloth was lost, then yes, she did the Takanat Chachamim with the Bdika. But the whole Bdika is meaningless because you never checked the cloth and you never saw what was on it. So in that case, we're going to force you to do another check before you do bi'ah. You could have had bi'ah without looking at the cloth. The question is not the looking at the cloth. The question is, does the cloth exist Because that's the Takanat Chachamim, that you need to check before Biyah as evidence that you could check later. And if you don't do that, then the Chachamim's Takanat goes out the window. So one's going to say, oh, I lost it. Oh, I can do Teshmi Shemitah without it. Then you undermine the whole Takanat Chachamim. Now this Gemara seems to favor Rashi's interpretation, because here it clearly seems like we're speaking about an aid before Tashmish. And the question seems to derive from our Mishnah. And if that's the case, then what does our Mishnah have to do with an aid before Tashmish? So for Rashi, it's very straightforward, because that's one of the checks that you need aidim for in our Mishnah. According to the Rashbam and the others that say that it is afterwards, then how do you explain the question here? He has to agree that the question here is about before Tashmish. So Tosafot over here gives two possibilities as to why that is, which is that if the aid beforehand was lost, then for sure she can't have Tashmish Amita, because that we already established back in the Mishnah, as we discussed before. After Tashmish, even if it's not lost the aid, you need to do another Bedikah before the next Tashmish. So then the question from the Mishnah, which is speaking about after Tashmish, is, because the check after the first Biyah will also function as the check before the second Biyah. And when they're not lost, it makes it sound like you don't have to do a check. So why are you telling me you need to do a new check? That's the question from the Mishnah. Inami Mariocha Be'ejachar Tashmish. Or maybe here it's speaking about the eight after Tashmish, Tosafot says, because Imavad, you can't have the next Biyah without that aid. But if it was still intact, then you'd be able to do Biyah, the second Biyah, without doing a check beforehand. Because the check after the first Biyah will also function as the check before the second Biyah. So I mean, putting it in between, then it's speaking about an aid after Tashmish, which is like our Mishnah, but that aid is acting as the aid for also the new Tashmish that's going to come afterwards. Therefore, if it's missing, you can't have the next Tashmish. If it's there, then it was the aid from the previous Tashmish afterwards, so then it's okay to go on with the next Tashmish because it's still there. The evidence is still there, and you'll be able to tell as if there was a check before the Tashmish. Amar Rav Yochanan, Asur la'adam shishamesh mitato bayom. It's asur for a person to have intercourse during the day. Now, Mikra, what's the pasuk that supports that? Shnemar, avad yomi valei bo, halayla amar hora gever. So this is Iyov speaking about himself, and he's saying basically, cursed is the day meaning not daytime, but the day on which I was born, and the night that I was conceived. Laila nitan le'hirayon, v'yom lo nitan le'hirayon. When it comes to leida, it mentions day in general. It doesn't matter day or night. Birth can be either day or night. When it comes to hirayon, conception, it says nighttime, saying that the time period for conception is at night, which means that's when you should have intercourse, is at night. V'shlakish amar mihocha, Shlakish says it's from here, bozeh derachav yamut. Derachav is a euphemism for derech gever balma, which means biyah. So buzeh derachav, the one who demeans or embarrasses his biyah, he's deserving of death. And as Rashi says over here, that amishamesh biyom balidei bizayon, that it is something that leads to demeaning, leads to embarrassment. Shema yirah badavar miguna v'itgana alav, because maybe he'll see something unappealing or something wrong with his wife, and then he won't be interested anymore, he won't be want to be with her anymore, which is that we want to protect the privacy of the individuals, even if they're married, that's because nobody is perfect. And you want the man, through his imagination, to be happy with the wife and that which he got, and if it's in the dark, then in the general sense, he's very happy with what he has. If all of a sudden he's nitpicking and seeing everything that he got with his wife, that there's this problem or this little thing's off or this is F, it will ruin the whole atmosphere and feeling. So now the question is, how does this relate to two things? Number one is the statement at the beginning of the Gemara, which is that you're not allowed to be mishamesh mitato l'oraner. Is that the same thing as what Rabbi Yochanan says over here, that you should be mishamesh mitato bayom, that the problem of oraner is the same problem as bayom? Or are they different halachot? Now, the reason that makes a difference is because we have Rava. Rava in other Gemarot, the Gemara in Ketubot, Rava says there are exceptions to the rule of Mishamesh Mitato Bayom. And those are, if mafel, if you darken the room, if you make it like night, then it would be okay during the day. And number two is if mafil biksuto, if with his cloak he covers over so the privacy is maintained and there's no exposure, then a Talmud Chacham could even mishamesh during the day. That's what Rava says. Rava has those dispensations. There are two questions you have to ask about that. First of all, are Rava and Rabbi Yochanan agreeing? Because Rava say Rabbi Yochanan's right, but there are exceptions to the rule. Or is Rava fundamentally disagreeing with Rabbi Yochanan? And Rabbi Yochanan says, no daytime. And the pasuk that he quotes seems to indicate that. Hey, Rayon, conceptions at night has nothing to do with Migunah or not Migunah. Sounds to be independent of that. Maybe Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with Rava and says, day is off limits no matter what. Whereas Rava believes that during the day you can compensate for that. And maybe Rava holds like Reish Lakish, who says the problem is Bizayon. And Bizayon can be compensated for by covering over or by darkening the room. So that's a question that's not clear here. Is first of all, the exception of Rava, how do they relate to Rabbi Yochanan? Does he agree with Rabbi Yochanan or is he disagreeing with Rabbi Yochanan? Does he hold like Reish Lakish? And then, even if you say that, what is the din with regards to Oran Air? Is Oran Air different than Bayom? Is Bayom a problem, according to Rabbi Yochanan, Quayom, just because it's day, and nothing to do with darkness or not darkness, because it's daytime, conceptions at night, then maybe the Oran Air isn't so problematic because it's at night. Or do we say that Bizayon is the main factor, and then Oran Air is problematic at night? And then again, you'd have to ask the same question, the exceptions of Rava, do they apply? By Oran Air, if you cover over, you put up a mechitza between the Nair and the bed, or you cover over with sheets or with a cloak, and therefore there's no exposure, can you overcome the problem of Oran Air? Or is Oran Air an inherent problem? Because even at night we're saying it's a problem. Maybe it's an inherent problem that you can't overcome, and the dispensations of Rava don't apply. So that is a question, is how to reconcile all these different memorot. Reish Lakish, high brother of Yochanan, my Darish Bey. Reish Lakish brings a different source for this. What does he do with the pasuk from Iyov? He violates the Darish Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa. He needs it for the drush of Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa, the Darish Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa. Oto malach hamumne al ha-herayon. The malach that is appointed over the herayon, over conception, Laila Shimo. His name is Laila. As Tosva points out, the malach is mumne on the herayon, conception, but not on leida. That's the Gemara in the beginning of Tanit that says there are three keys that HaKadosh Baruch Hu keeps in his hands and doesn't give to anyone. And that is the key of Leida, the key of Matar, and the key of Tchiyat HaMeitim. Over there, the Gemara speaks about the fact that he lends them out sometimes. And the Gemara says that he doesn't give all three of them away to one individual. But individuals like Eliyahu and Elisha had the key to Matar, had the key to Tchiyat HaMeitim, but didn't have all of those keys together. And one of those keys is the key of Leida. And that's why we're speaking about Herayon, conception over here, not Leida, because there's no malach that's Mumuneh on the Leida. You know, tel tipa, umamidah lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he takes the drop of Shechvat Zera, that is going to be the conception and create the blood. V'omer, lifnei Hanav, ribono shalom, tipa zo, mate elea. What's the story with this Shechvat Zera that's about to cause the woman to be pregnant? What is the story with it? Gibor or Chalash? Is it going to be strong or weak? Chacham or Tipesh? Is it going to be smart? Is it going to be a fool? Ashir or Ni? Is it going to be wealthy? Is it going to be poor? Vilu Rasha, Tzadik, Lo Kamar. Over there, the question he doesn't ask him, is he going to be a Tzadik or Rasha? Kid Rabbi Chanina, like Rabbi Chanina says, Dam Rabbi Chanina, Kol Bidei Shemayim, Chutz Mirat Shemayim. Everything is in the hands of God, with the exception of Yirat Shemayim, whether you're a Tzadik or you're a Rasha. Shenemar, Vata Yisrael, Ma Hashem Elokecha, Shoel Mimach. What is that God asking of you? Ki Im Liyira. All God asks for you is to have Yirat Hashem, meaning to be a Tzadik and a Rasha. That's all He asks of you, because that's all He can ask of you, which is to do the right thing. So that means that simply reading this Gemara, that the character traits of the individuals endowed with are already predetermined. A person has tendencies, has character traits, has a nature to them. All of that is predetermined, and that's what's being said here. The question is, what you do with that? What you do with the character traits, the kochot that God gives you, the weaknesses that God gives you, what do you make of them? What do you do with them? That's the only question that's left for you. But everything else is already predetermined. That's a pretty straightforward statement. The problem is that we have an alternate Gemara, and that's what Tosafot brings from the Gemara in Tubot, which says, Kol Dideiv Shamayim, everything is in the hands of God, chutz mitzinim upachim, except for the cold and hot, or the little bit where you get sickness, like a flu or something like that. Everything else is bidei shemayim. So how do you reconcile that with this? Over here we said that it's a kol bidei shemayim, chutz miyad shemayim. The Gemara in Ketubot makes it sound like even Yirat Shemayim is Bidei Shemayim. And Tosafot brings an additional question based on the Gemara in Brachot, whereby Chizkiah didn't want to have children because he knew his children were going to be Rishayim. What do you mean? How does he know they're going to be Rishayim? That's the one thing that's left up to human choice, Bechira Chofshit. How did he know ahead of time that it was the case that they were going to be Rishayim? So Tosafot gives two answers to this, which are very fundamental philosophical answers about how we view free choice. First answer he gives is, Hero Mashatid Liot. He had a nevuah and he saw what was going to be in the future. Sein Hachanami, that is the choice in the individuals. God showed him the future. Now that also is a question that you have to deal with. That's a question brought up by the Rambam in Hilchot Shuvah, and there he doesn't really answer it so well, and the Raivid jumps on him for that. But that is, how is it possible that God knows the future, and yet we still have Bechira Chofshit? That's a very fundamental philosophical question. But again, the easiest way and perspective on it is to just say that Hashem is outside the realm of time. When you're outside the realm of time, then you're not bound by sequential types of activities. And therefore, you can see, you can be standing over the whole timeline and have a vision as to what's happening. People who live within the timeline, they only see things in sequential order. That's what's behind them and what's in front of them. That's all they can see. And therefore, they can't tell what's going to happen in the future, and that can still be determined by the individual. So God's not necessarily influencing what's going to happen, and you still have free choice, but he can still knows the future. And that's the simplest way to explain it, even though it's a really difficult philosophical question. As the Raivid notes, it's very difficult to answer, and the Rambam should never have raised it because he doesn't answer it well. That's one question. But the second question is, what is really left to Bechira Chofshit? What do you have free choice about? So according to this, Tosafot says, you do still have free choice about Yirat Shemayim. And that is, when it says over there, Hachari b'toldota adam u'midotav, if we were speaking about the character of an individual and his state of mind, the way that he deals with things, Hatamari b'mora'ot. Over there, it's dealing with the activities or the things that were going to happen to a person, meaning that there's an interaction between two things. There's the individual who already has built-in character traits, and as a built-in persona, and then there are activities or events in life which you're going to bump into. And the Gemara Ketubot is telling you that the events in life are already predetermined. What you're going to bump into is predetermined. The character traits, our Gemara is saying, is already predetermined. The question is, how do the two interact? How does it interact between your character and those events? And that's where your Bechira Chofshit is exercised, is in that interaction. You can make the choice as to what your response and how you react to those predetermined events with your predetermined character traits. That's one answer. The second answer Tosafot gives makes it much harder, which is, Inami harbe dvarim talui b'mazal. There are many things that are predetermined by mazal, which means that we know that if a person's born under a certain constellation, the Gemara says, then he has a likelihood or a tendency to be driven in a certain direction. So even though that is the case, that's not called Bidei Shemayim. Tosafot says that it's called Mazel, but it's not called Bidei Shemayim. Bidei Shemayim means it's predetermined, the Gamrei. Now even though Mazel is also something that is somewhat predetermined, nevertheless Tosafot says that's not called Bidei Shemayim. In this answer, Tosafot creates a very difficult perspective in terms of this Gemara, which is a Kol Bidei Shemayim. Everything is determined by heaven. That means with Ashkocha Protit, with Akash Baruch Hu directing it, Chutz Mi Yirat Shemayim. Yirat Shemayim is not determined by Day Shemayim, it's determined by Mazel, which is that a person's born with a certain tendency, certain character traits, and those tendencies and character traits will lead him to react in a certain way. And that's almost predetermined because Mazel will determine how the individual will react in situations. And that's what Chizkiah saw. He looked into the future. He knew the mazel under which his children would be born. He knew the events they were going to face. And he said they're going to turn out to be Rishayim, because that's going to be the natural way, the easy way, or the natural way that will happen is in that manner. Now, where's your free choice left? If even here it says, Kol Bidei Shemayim, Chutz Mi Yirat Shemayim, and even Yirat Shemayim is predetermined, just not by Bidei Shemayim, it's determined by mazel, the laws of nature, the laws of the constellations, that's going to determine it. Then where do you have any free choice? That's what Rosh says over here. Yesh nomar she'av she'mazalo noteh b'achad min hadrachim. You know his mazel directs him in one way in life. Mikol makom b'yadohu li'itchazek al yitzro. He has the ability to jump tracks or get out of that mazel. So that limits your Bechira Chavshi to a very, very narrow scope of choices in your life. Your character traits, your persona is all predetermined. That's Bidei Shamayim. Even your events that you're going to meet up with in your life, that's all predetermined. Your reactions or the interactions between you and those events are somewhat predetermined. Not Bidei Shamayim, but because of mazel. Mazel means that the way that you are created, the way that your character is, and that the constellations align and the nature, the laws of nature, your reactions to the events which you're going to face are basically predetermined. Well, that means there's no Bechira Chavshi left, which is a very big problem. But then how can you punish or reward people? So the answer to that is, you can break out of your mazel. You can fight the mazel. It's hard, it's difficult, but that's where you can exercise Bechira Chavshi. That leads then to many different views within the world of Bechira Chavshit, which is, do you really exercise Bechira Chavshit at every moment in your life? From here, it sounds like not really. The question is, at either pivotal moments in your life, you exercise Bechira, and then you results in different views as to Bechira Chavshit that you can see in Michtav Me'eliyahu, Rav Dessler, according to Rav Soloveitchik, and many of the Rishonim, as to where you exercise free choice. Now, it's true, according to the Tosfot HaRosh, in Tosfot HaRosh, you can exercise this all the time. You can be fighting your mazel all the time. But the likelihood of that being successful, or that really working, is low. And therefore, the other philosophers come up with explanations that you only exercise Bechira Chavshit either at maybe pivotal moments in your life, one, two, or three pivotal moments in your life, you exercise the choice then, and that's where you break the train, you jump tracks. Or you jump rails. Or others suggest that you don't have a Bechira Chavshit in general. Meaning that your social structure, your environment will determine what your decisions are. Meaning based on all the things we said here. There are moments at the edges of that. So for instance, for an individual who grows up in a social structure and a environmental structure that includes Shmirat Shabbat. So for them, Shmirat Shabbat is not really Bechira Chavshit. Bechira Chavshit is really only at the edges of where your performance is, which is in areas where it's not really predetermined by your social structure and your environment. That's where you exercise the free choice. But both of those speak to this idea that much of your life is predetermined. It is that you exercise Bechira Chavshit either on the extremes or on the edges of decisions where they're not already governed by your lifestyle and your persona, or that you exercise Bechira Chavshit at pivotal points in your life, which can help you to jump out or break out from your mazel, or you could even say it more strongly, which is that you have Bechira Chavshit all the time. Question is, are you going to fight your Yetzer or you're not going to fight your Yetzer? You're going to fight the mazel, your predetermined character trait, or you're not. And how hard you fight will determine how often you have Bechira Chavshit. So those are different philosophical views with regards to this. There are extreme views within the Rishonim, including the Rambam and the Shmona Prakim, who says that in answering the question of why do bad things happen to good people, basically, there's Teva. God put the world in Teva, and everything that happens to a person is just the laws of physics and the laws of nature, and that's why it happens. Now, obviously, that view would be viewed heretically by many in the Jewish world. The Rambam later on, in his later works, changes his mind about that. It doesn't say it exactly that way, but you can clearly see from that. And it is the view of the majority of Rishonim that much of your life is predetermined and that being in the wrong place at the wrong time is just that. That is the nature of the world and laws of physics, not necessarily because of your zchuyot and your chiyuvim or your averot. And again, that issue of Bechira Chavshit and the Skarv Onesh, where God intervenes in divine providence to save you, happen at rare moments in most of your life. Is predetermined according to many of the Rishonim. Rabbi Yochanan, how does he respond to Reish Lakish's statement about the limud that he has? Imkein yichtov kra gever horeh. Then the pasuk should have changed the order and put the gever that is conceived, my horeh gever. Why does it change the order horeh gever? And then it puts the horeh next to the laila. In doing such, laila nitan eirayon, the yom lo nitan eirayon. It teaches you both things. He doesn't disagree that it teaches you the din of Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa, but it also teaches you the din in the order of the words of the pasuk. The fact that it put horeh before gever and juxtaposed horeh to laila teaches the additional din that Hirayon is only relegated to night. Rabbi Yochanan, I cried to Reish Lakish, my Dorish Bey. What does Rabbi Yochanan do with Reish Lakish? It's Potso from Mishlei. Mibaylei, the Chetiv, Besefer Ben Sira. They need it for that which is written in Sefer Ben Sira. It's interesting. The Gemara many times does quote Sefer Ben Sira, but doesn't necessarily quote it explicitly. It will just say Kidichtiv, like it's written. And many times it quotes it as if it is a pasuk. Even though it's a Sefer Ben Sira or the Sefer Ben Yoyada, they quote them as if they were psukim, even though they're not psukim. It was not included in the canon, Sefer Ben Sira, even though the translations of the Tanakh did include Sefer Ben Sira in the translations. Seems to be that there was a more folksy version of the Sefer Ben Sira that included it, not just the core work of Sefer Ben Sira that was written during Bayit Sheni, during the time of Shimon HaTzadik, that the Chachamim considered to be a very important work and attributed kavod to that book and quoting it many times in the Gemara, but there was a more folksy version that included other things in it, like folklore, stories, fables, other types of false emunot, and things like that. And so maybe the Chachamim's objection to the Sefer Ben Sira was that more folksy version of the Sefer Ben Sira that was a Hebrew Aramaic version of it, whereas the original book was completely in Hebrew and only had the things that the Chachamim were probably in line with, because it seems like he was one of the early Tanaim that wrote such a book. Shalosha Saneti Varba'a Lo Ahavti. There are three that I hate and four that I don't love. If you go through what we're going to read now, it makes it sound like there were three that I hated and the fourth one I don't like, which is that there are only four items that he's going to list here, unless you use the Amrila. Sar Hagargal, the Beit HaMishtaot. I hate the person who's a Talmud Chacham, who regularly attends Beit HaMishtaot, whether that means weddings, whether that means drinking parties. I hate a Talmud Chacham that's continuously at the parties drinking. Ramila Sar Hanargan, as Rashi says over here, someone who talks a lot. Ramila Sar Hanargaz. He gets angry and he is loose when he gets drunk, and therefore he doesn't control himself. So these are three possibilities. Marsha points out, these are the three things that we say you can test a person by. Koso, Kaso, and Kiso. Koso is the first one. I don't like someone, a Talmud Chacham, who's going to drink all the time. The Kaso is the last one. Ramila Saranargaz. From the word Rogez, from the word anger. So that's Kaso. And then the Sarha Nargan is Marbed Varim. And the way that Moshe interprets that is that people are speaking about his interactions, that they don't trust him. They don't think his Masav Matan is good, that he's not a trustworthy individual. And that is Kiso, by his pocketbook. That's how the Marsha explains these three items. A Meshiv Shevet B'Merome Koret, person who sets up the Beit Midrash and teaches his Talmidim up at the high places, but it seems to be it's a public place that is high up in the city, because as Rashi says over here, first of all, it's like Gasuta Ruach, and you hang out and you do your teaching all the way at the high point of the city. And number two is because you are interrupted all the time. Passerbys, it's in a public venue. People are going to be passing there all the time, interrupting you. So it's also a problem because of that. Ochez ba'ma umashtin mayim, someone who holds his member and urinates. And the fourth one is a nichnas debet chaveiro pitom, someone who bursts into his friend's house without giving warning. I'm Rabbi Yochanan afilu beito. Not only someone else's house, even his own house, he should be careful with. So here you had four items that were listed. There's the Sar with the three different versions. And then we have Meshiv Shevet Moray Keret, Ochez Bama, and Nichnas de Beito. Those are four. So it sounds like the first three he hates, the fourth one he doesn't like.
And so Rabbi Yochanan interprets the Pasuk as Bozed Derachav, one who demeans himself and his ways are unbecoming, then Yamut. He's going to commit character suicide. He's going to ruin his reputation and ruin his standing.
There are four things that God hates, and I don't love them. It's a very hard statement. If God hates them, why don't you hate them also? Why is it that God's hating them and you don't like them? So the Mifashim over here give a number of answers. the Maharal suggests in the Chidushei Agadot, with the classic Maharal, that Hashem, who is the ultimate Kadosh and Kedusha, he can determine, he can know whether someone has that Kedusha or doesn't have that Kedusha, and therefore he can be determined and say, Saneti, I hate it. But a person who's imperfect can't hate something else because they don't have that perfection in Kedusha to have the capacity to say, I hate it. So you can say, I don't like it, I dislike it, but they can't be at the level of a Kodesh Baruch to say, I hate it, to know that it's absolutely evil. That's one way to explain it. Another way to explain it, which I lean towards, is that a Kodesh Baruch Hu knows with certainty. A Kodesh Baruch Hu knows the person and that what's driving them and the miniyot and the causes for those behaviors, and therefore he can hate them because he knows exactly what's driving it. A human being only sees the activities, doesn't know what's driving them. So therefore he can say, I dislike it, but he can't really say, absolutely, I hate it, because he doesn't know really what's driving. He doesn't know if there are extenuating circumstances or what's causing the problem, and therefore he can't say, I hate it. Others suggest that the difference is where Rav Shimon Yochai says that I don't like these people naturally, and that would have been my natural tendency. But now that God hates them, I also hate them. He was not saying that I don't hate them like God, but he's just saying, irrespective of what God felt about these people, I didn't get along with these type of people. They bother me. And then he says, well, once God gave the stamp and said, I hate them, then I also hate them. He's not saying anything different than God. He's just telling you what his natural feelings would have been anyway. The Maharsha suggests that the difference is that Akash Baruch Hu doesn't have anything that blocks him from hating these types of people, whereas Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is governed by the principle of Lo Tisnat Achicha Bilvavecha. Therefore, he can't hate them. He can only not love them. Although that's somewhat difficult because Lo Tisnat Achicha Bilvavecha is only Oseh Maaseh Achicha. That's only when he acts appropriately and when he does what is right. If he's not doing what is right, then there is no restriction of Lo Tisnat Achicha Bilvavecha. Again, we've spoken in the past about the dangers of that type of thinking, religious hatred that is driven by people doing the wrong thing. So maybe Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai felt that that wasn't appropriate for an individual to engage in. So therefore, he softens his stance a little bit and says, Eni Olavan, rather than hating them, where Akash Baruch Hu, who doesn't have that restriction or doesn't have that issue, can even hate these individuals. Anechlas the Beito Pitom, Beinzarech Lamar Beit Chamiro. Here it's done the other way around. Someone who bursts into his house, his own house, and you don't even have to tell me if you burst into someone else's house. And the reason being that people might want privacy. It's not like today where you have areas of the house where you can go into privacy. Over there, they had a one or two room house. If you burst into the house, you might be bursting to someone who's changing. Might be bursting to someone who's doing something that they need privacy for. You need to give warning. You need to knock before you come in. Ocheiz ba'ama u'mashtin. Someone who holds their member and urinates. U'mashtin ma'im arum lifnei mitato. Someone who urinates naked before their bed. Over here, the Gemara doesn't bring any reasoning for it. The Tosfot says over here that the Gemara in Shabbat says it's kasha li anyuta. It causes a person to be poor. It's not that he urinates a room, but rather he has bia a room. And the reason being, because you should be sanua b'shat tashmish. And that's what he's complaining about. And someone who has bia in front of any living creature. Amalei Rav Yehuda l'Shmuel, v'afilu lifnei achbarim, even in front of mice, you can't have bia. Amalei Shinana, Shmuel says back to his Talmid Rav Yehuda, he nicknamed Shinana, lo, ela kagon shel beit ploni, shemeshamshim mitotehem lifnei avdehem shibtocheihem. No, not like that family that they actually have intercourse in front of their servants and in front of their maidservants. It means human beings. It doesn't mean animals. Ve'inu mai dorush. So then why did that family think it was okay to do that? We have a Mamar Chazal that indicates otherwise. Because it says, Shvulachem epoi machamor. By Kedat Yitzchak, it says that Avram says to Yishmael and Eliezer, according to the Midrash, you stay here with the donkey. And Chazal Darshan, Ahma domele chamor. That's a nation that has a din like a behema, like a chamor. So they didn't view them as human beings. They viewed their Eved Kanani and their Shiva Kanani like a chamor. And we just said now that in front of animals, it's not a problem. So that's why they thought it was okay. But Shmuel clearly disagreed. Whether he disagrees fundamentally, even though there's a drush of Chazal, but you can't say that an Evan or a Shivcha is not a human being. It might be that for Yichus and for certain perspectives, we treat them like Behemoth, but they're not an animal. They're a human being in the end. and it's inappropriate, or whether he disagrees more fundamentally with the whole drasha, it's not clear. Rabba Bar Huna Mikarkesh Zage Dekilta. Rabba Bar Huna used to, on the canopy over the bed, ring the bells that were attached to it in order to warn all the people there to get away because he was going to engage in Tashmisha Mita. If they think about a situation in which the whole family is living in a one-bedroom or two-bedroom place, then the people are always around. So everybody knows what's going on with everybody. Here he just wants to tell people to leave the room during that time. Tosfot over here says he doesn't like Rashi's interpretation of Mekashkesh Zage because it's not Derech Tzanua to let everybody know you're about to have Biyah. And he says that the Girsa he thinks like the Rabbeinu Chanana on the Oroch is Mekashkesh Gaze Zvuvim. That he did similar thing here, that he used to chase away the flies, chasing away living creatures, and not indicating to human beings that he was having biyah. So it's similar to what Abaye Bale Didve and Rava Bale Perchu Bruche, Abaye Bale Didve. Abaye used to chase out all the flies before he had biyah. Rava Bale Bruche, Rava got rid of, Rashi says over here, itushim, mosquitoes, before he had tashmisha mita. So here it sounds like they're more makpid. By the cases before, we said only humans have to be out of the way. And Rabba Bar Rav Huna, according to Rashi, also said that. Over here you have Amoraim saying that even any living creature is problematic. To Yitzanua, you chase everything out of the room. So now, Amar Rav Shimai Chai, Hei Dvarim, Shoseh Otam, Mitchayev Nafsho, Damo Brosho. There are five things where a person, in essence, is taking his life into his own hands, and he'll be responsible for that. He'll be held accountable for the fact that he took his life into his own hands. Uchel shum kaluf, batzal kaluf, beitza klupa. Someone who eats garlic, onion, or eggs that are shelled. Vashotem mashkim mezugin. Or he drinks water that is filtered, clear water, shavar le'em alayla, that were left out overnight. Rashi says over here, the overnight is akulukai. That includes all the things that were shelled before. They're all covered by this thing of overnight. That's first thing, are all these foods that you shelled and left overnight. Someone drinks water that was laid overnight. Number three is a lan bebeit hakvarot. Someone sleeps in the cemetery. Number four is an otel tzibar naf, it is okran the reshut rabim. Someone who cuts his nails or and throws them out into the reshut rabim. Mitiz dam umeshemesh mitato. Someone who bloodlets and then has biya afterwards. All of these things are dangerous for one's health. And if something happens to them, it's not a surprise, but they're responsible because they could have prevented the problem. Okay, we'll stop here by the two dots on the top of Yud Zayin Amud Aleph.